You are about to participate in the most ambitious culinary experiment ever imagined.
This competition is going to test everything.
Adapt quickly to anything. I mean anything. The wildest day of your life starts right now.
All new 24 and 24 Last Chef Standing. Sunday night at 8 on Food Network. Stream on Max.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hey, Geekscapers, welcome to a brand new Geekscape podcast. I'm your host, Jonathan London. And if this is your first Geekscape, well, I like to sit down with filmmakers. Maybe they're actors, maybe they're comic book creators, maybe they're video game writers, whatever it is. I like to sit down with storytellers. That's what we celebrate here at Geekscape. Mainly pop culture storytellers. We've got Comic-Con coming this summer. Are you all ready to see us at the Geekscape booth? I think this will be our 12th, 13th year in San Diego. At the booth, and I'm not ready for it, but the whole Geekscape team is going to be there. We're excited to see you. If you happen to be at San Diego Comic-Con this summer, drop by. We've got a ton of horror content coming on Geekscape, so definitely share this with your friends. Tell them to subscribe. You maybe have downloaded, if you're a Geekscape regular, you don't need this whole spiel, but if this is your first Geekscape, you may have clicked on this because we're going to be talking all Robert Englund on this episode. I can't wait to do it. My buddies Gary and Chris they're two documentarians who made a documentary about Robert. We'll tell you where you can watch it. We can tell you all about Robert. Robert's been on the show before, as you remember. And then as I'm watching this documentary, it's like a hit list of some past Geekscape guests. And we'll talk about that as well. So we're going to be talking a lot of Robert Englund. But as I said earlier, there's lots of horror coming to Geekscape. So if this is your first Geekscape, we've got a couple of horror creators that I've either pre-recorded or will be having as guests on the show very soon. So you're going to want to subscribe and all that. All right, let's get this thing going. All right, Geekscape, let's get right to it. We're talking today about a brand new documentary that's coming out called Hollywood Dreams and Nightmares, the Robert Englund story. Whether or not you're familiar with Robert Englund, Freddy Krueger is most famously known for, or not, there's a lot in this documentary that I didn't know. And as I said, there's past Geekscape guests like Kenny Johnson and Fred Reddick. Or Jeffrey Reddick, my bad. I was about to say Tim Sullivan, and I'm just meshing all. There's too many Geekscape guests in this documentary. I think I'm just doing this show way too long, and I've just compiled some really great interviews that are on the feed if you want to go explore it. But you're going to want to listen to this one right now because this documentary is available on Screenbox and digital on June 6, 2023, at least here in the States. Who knows? Maybe you discovered this in 2024 or 2025. But let's get to it. Let's talk some Robert Englund, one of my favorite subjects, because Freddy was my guy. Maybe you're listening to this being like, oh, I'm Michael Myers. I'm Jason. I'm into more into that. But Freddy was my guy. Maybe you're super young and you're like, I like Jigsaw. I'm a Chucky man. I don't know. But Freddy was always my guy. That was the one I wanted to be for Halloween for like 7 years straight. But let's talk Freddy. These guys know him even better. Gary and Chris, the documentarians behind Hollywood Dreams and Nightmares, Robert Englund story. How are you guys?
Yeah, great. Thank you. Yeah, doing really well.
Oh, you're doing British, I think.
Yeah, we're very, very British. Yeah. Very British.
You strike up the mic. It's like, oh, these dudes are British. How did y'all get to doing this document. You have the nerdiest room, Gary. If you're watching this on video over on our YouTube channel, Gary is surrounded by all sorts of pop culture icons, from Darth Vader to Leatherface to Freddie Mass in the background. Chris is married. I'm kidding. Gary, I'm kidding.
My wife's somewhere there, embalmed. So don't worry about her.
Oh, that is her there, isn't it? That's not Leatherface.
I'm sorry.
Sorry to tell you this, Gary, as well, but we've been having an affair.
Chris is holding up a Leatherface mask as well, for those of y'all who are listening to this on the podcast feed. So I'm guessing y'all grew up not unlike myself, like wanting to be Freddy every Halloween. He was your dude. And you loved the Halloween movies. You loved the Friday the 13th movies. Those are great comic book, that era of 80s comic book, like almost supervillain, you know, horror icons. But I'm going to throw Pinhead in there as well. And Leatherface, of course, your friends. but what was it about Robert Englund? This is not your only documentary you've done, you know, exploring the horror genre. But what was it about Robert Englund specifically?
I think you just said it straight away. Robert was kind of my boy as well. I imagine it was Chris's. I've always been a Freddy Krueger fan. I mean, I was allowed to watch horror films, hence why I got all this crap in my office here now. Yeah, from the age of about 4 or 5.
That's your bedroom.
It's not my bedroom.
Is that that's your red room? I got it now.
This is my victim's room. I was watching Nightmare on Elm Street as a very young age. You know, I was allowed to watch it at like 5 and 6. So I had posters of Freddy Krueger on my bedroom wall. So Robert has always been there, you know, and obviously Freddy Krueger's always been there. So yeah, he's definitely a huge part of my childhood, really, and my kind of horror kind of tastes. Same view. Chris is more of a.
Chris is afraid to say something because he'll say some smart ass remarks.
He'll say something about Jason.
Jason or Leatherface for Y ones. But then, you were, like you said, we're all from that era, aren't we? So we all sort of said, and to be honest, I think when you said earlier about, you know, when you were teeing us up about, you know, you got jigsawing out these days, but I personally don't feel those kind of characters in these, you know, more modern contemporary films kind of reach the pop culture heights of the former, you know, the 1980s, because I think it's because of ultimately where the genres went as well, the franchises went, because they came more cartoony, comic booky, and started to sort of absorb a bit more comedy. I think that's where they kind of infiltrated like the children's market, and that's why they were more accessible. Whereas, given that Saw falls under the whole torture porn nature of films, it doesn't quite sort of translate as well to like, oh yeah, kids' toys of, you know, decapitate. Well, everyone gets decapitated. We kind of discussed, you know, the thing with Robert in particular. Robert Englund was probably the first actor I knew of the horror genre, and that's because he translates through the character. They're one in the same, him and Freddy. Whereas obviously with the Jasons, you gotta go, oh, it's Kane Hodder, it's and all the other names. So I think that's like why he is the poster boy of the genre.
And what I love about it too in the documentary, and I don't want to spoil the whole documentary, folks, you're gonna want to check it out for yourself on June 6th at Screenbox and Digital. Geekscape is listening to this. My audio got better. I had the wrong input on my mic, and I think the audio got better. If not, I still sound like a jerk. The content from my voice won't get better, but I hope the quality does. Sorry about that, Geekscapist. The idea that he was cast in Wes Craven knew he was going to have about an inch of makeup on his face. I don't think he was cast because he was rail thin. You know, because I've met Robert. He's not necessarily rail thin. He's not Doug Jones, for instance. No. But casting him for the reasons that the makeup looked great on him, and that they didn't go for Kane Hodder, who was kind of circling the same sort of community, it changes everything. Because when you think of Freddy, he's lithe and he's creepy and he's Slender Man like in this. And like you said it, Chris, like chameleon, he becomes a chameleon in a lot of these roles. He becomes heroin needles, or he becomes Super Freddy, or he becomes a skateboard, or he becomes a video game, or he becomes all these different things. And I do attribute a lot of that stuff to the comedy. I think that's why Pennywise, maybe, you know, with the clown makeup and everything, I think kids are into the Pennywise stuff.
Yeah.
And it's not dissimilar. I think the success of Stranger Things is the creativity
of the end that some of the characters meet. But there's something distinctly about Robert as acting. What I like about this documentary, Geekscape, is how much time it spends early on Robert growing up, and then the stories I didn't know about Robert, the actor in Hollywood. People like William Catt, the greatest American hero. It was awesome. A mention of Richard Dreyfuss. The Star Wars story.
Yeah.
Crazy. If you want to share that one, that was one that my brother had heard, another horror file. But I myself was like, hey, man, did you hear the story about Mark Hamill and how he found out about the Luke Skywalker audition?
Yeah.
Like, what's the story of that one?
Well, don't ask Mark Hamill, because we had read it years ago. I think it was going around. I think it's even probably in Robert's biography, his book, I think talks about that story. And I remember about 2 or 3 years ago, Mark Hamill did a tweet debunking Robert's story and basically saying, you know, he got the part because of his manager. But Robert is adamant that story, you know, he's truthful. So much so that we found a photograph of Mark and Robert together. You know, they were kind of like friends. You know, they were in the same circles. So it's kind of a strange one. He's so kind of like clear in his story, Robert, about what happened and, you know, and the leading up to it. So the story basically is obviously that Robert auditioned for Han Solo, or was seen for Han Solo whilst auditioning for Apocalypse Now. And then when he stole some of his script pages and took them home, and then at the time, Mark was allegedly going around to Robert's house quite a lot and obviously sharing a few beers with him. And he gave Mark Hamill the sides for Luke Skywalker, and obviously Mark read them and then contacted his agent. And that was a nice little Hollywood story, really. And he tells you about where we were in the 70s as well. You know, everybody was trying to get the same roles and everyone was connected and everyone was chilling and hanging out together. It's a great story. And again, we tried to get hold of Mark Hamill and we were pretty told no. We had a response from Mark Hamill, people going, Mark did not share an apartment with Robert Englund. We didn't say that. We said that he ran his apartment quite a lot. I think it was pretty clear they didn't want to pursue that story. But we put it in because I'm a massive Star Wars fan, hence Darth Vader standing behind me. And secondly, you know, it's a great Hollywood story, and it's Robert's story. So I like it.
It's not unbelievable. You know, William Catt had gone in supposedly and read for Mark, for Luke Skywalker as well. Yeah. And he's friends with Robert. Like, Robert went and auditioned for Apocalypse Now. That is all Zoetrope stuff. That is where those auditions were held. It's not an unbelievable story at all that Robert's in Zoetrope, seeing if he can just get a read for that. We had an earlier story from about 6 months ago about Harrison Ford and his story of being the carpenter at Zoetrope.
Yeah,
he
got
hired and he couldn't get a read for Lucas. And Lucas is like, hey man, I just put you in American Graffiti. Like, I don't think there's a role for this. I'm going to look at other actors. And Harrison's upset about it. And then he got placed he took the carpenter job as a favor to a producer who knew, like, hey, at least you're going to be in the building. And it's believable that a lot of these actors, young actors that were in that generation, hanging out with all these directors that were in that post USC generation, that they all read for it. Right? Endless Summer, that has so many of those actors in it. You know, all those directors were all in the same mix. I'm going to side, and Mark, love you, man. Love you, man. End up seeing him at conventions, and he's going to be like, Mark doesn't know me from a shoe, but I don't, you know, I go back to the story from last LA Comic Con. I haven't shared it with you guys, but I think I've shared it on Geekscape, where I showed up early to go through my sides to moderate main stage panels, and William Shatner walks in by himself, and of all the empty tables in the green room, he decides to sit at mine and just chill and drink his coffee, and I gave him his privacy and this and that. But I don't want Mark Hamill coming in and doing the same thing and being like, hey, you're the dude who backed up Roberts. Sorry about that. There's a siren going by, which means that he's the guy. Mark Hamill. Usually on the Geekscape Network, we say that that's because we just added another show here, because Matt Kelly is just adding shows like wildfire. I look up and there's a Pop-Tart review show on the podcast network, and I'm like, all right, well, fine, we'll go with it. And then it'll be the biggest show on the network is how those things go. That story was amazing. And then just his trials and tribulations as an actor was really amazing, and how it wasn't too long after what I thought is one of my favorite roles of his, V.
Yeah.
And it was the first biggie for him.
That was the one that made him an international star, was Kenny Johnson's V.
I think what you're saying actually as well, aren't you, John, is like, what I love about, especially when you do these, you know, when you watch anything, documentaries or read books on people from a certain era, it's so interesting to see all the years prior to them hitting it big. You know, you've got about a 12 years worth of a screen career up until V, and then 14 respectively for Elm Street. And we're in a day and age now, I'm going to keep using this anecdote again and again, but a bit sure. Like what you're doing with Pop-Tarts, where in this day and age now, you fart in a microphone on TikTok, and you're a celebrity. Back then, there was just that sense of like you had to build to get to that moment. I'm not saying there wasn't any other, you know, overnight successes back then, but that's what's just really interesting. And it just barely reflects where he ended up going or what he became. You know, he's in all these like kind of 70s gritty, you know, thrillers like The Hustle or dramas like Stay Hungry, Buster and Billy. He's quite relevant in Big Wednesday.
Mm-hmm. And Big Wednesday. I said Endless Weekend. It's Big Wednesday.
I thought you said Endless.
Yeah, my bad. My bad on that one. Geekscape is like, what are you talking about? Yeah.
It's Australian, isn't it? Endless Summer?
Yeah. Like, yeah. Endless Summer. Yeah. Big Wednesday.
Yeah. That's what I really enjoyed. And I think for us, in particular with this project, we've always been quite restricted to one film. You know, and you've got to focus on that film. Pennywise, 89-90, Robocop, 87. So it's a lot broader project and challenge for us to do this. And the one thing I was so excited about doing was like, oh, we're going to do some 70s stuff. And that was a bit of a challenge, but I really enjoyed the idea of like, you know, especially working with the music, which I think we did all right with in the end, to be honest, especially thanks to Sean's original score. But it's like experimenting with genres. So you go from like, you know, lighthearted country bumpkin dramas to dark thrillers with Burt Reynolds and his toupee. And then
that story is nuts. And Geeky, yeah. I'm not going to spoil the toupee story here, but that Burt Reynolds story is nuts. And I mean, Burt was as nice as he could have been about that toupee incident, but that story is crazy, and I love that story. Geekscapers, you got to check out the movie to hear that one.
Just for that story.
Stories. There's a lot of stories like that. Yeah, and again, other people like who've been on Geekscape, Adam Green and Tony Todd, like they have such amazing stories in this documentary. What I love is to what you said, Chris, about that era of the 70s. And you're right. We only see celebrity culture. We only see success, but when Lance Henriksen is telling you the state of the apartments that they're living in, and they're not even their apartments. Like they're living on couches in New York or in Hollywood. That's a great story. The Lance Henriksen stuff. I read his book, Not Bad for a Human. Have you read that biography?
Yeah,
I haven't. And I'd love to.
That is a fantastic biography. Geekscape is, if you're a Lance Henriksen fan, and of course, probably you're listening to Geekscape, you're a Lance Henriksen fan. His biography that he wrote himself, there's no ghostwriting on this thing. He's telling you a lot of stories that I'm like, oh, that's pretty candid, like to share. Yeah. You know, Lance younger self with the ladies and this and that, but it's a fantastically written autobiography, and a lot of the stories are here as well. Loved it. One and y'all kind of go sequentially through his filmography. What's the decision there?
I think, you know, at the end of the day, when you're doing a documentary about Robert, you've got to hit those kind of like popular films, really. I mean, Freddy's obviously very important, and that was from the get-go that Freddy Krueger was important. Evidently, why the documentary has been made, that career has been developed around Freddy. However, there are some kind of key roles, really, what Robert's fans obviously are aware of. And also, it's kind of films that you want to share with people who don't know about those movies. So everyone knows that Robert was in, you know, Wishmaster and Urban Legend, 2001 Maniac. But as Chris said, there's things like Buster and Billy, Stay Hungry, you know, Dead and Buried. You know, there's lists and lists of films. So I think when you're going through his career, I mean, we could have covered everything. We could have covered every TV show. But we're trying to cover the most important ones in his filmography. But also, from a kind of very filmmaking point of view, it's covering the ones where you can get people to talk about it as well. You know, we do try, obviously, every single kind of like person that's worked with Robert. Unfortunately, because Robert's been in the business for over 50 years, there are people who unfortunately passed away, especially directors when he was a younger guy, they were older, and some of the actors he worked with. However, you know, everybody that we interviewed has a connection to Robert in a film. You know, isn't just putting faces on there for point of it. It's basically everyone's been working with him. So it's trying to find people that work with him on key parts and also who can add gold. I mean, we all love Robert, but a two-hour documentary just Robert talking to the screen, you know, will be interesting. It will be quite tiring as well. You know, from a creative,
he loves to talk. He's a great. But you love hearing those stories.
Well, we've got a bonus feature called Chatterbox, and it's about Robert England talking a lot. It's everybody else talking about Robert England talking. One of our bonus features. I think it's really important, wasn't it, Chris, to get kind of some of them key roles in, and also Robert himself has suggested certain films he wanted covering. Well, he's very proud of his work, Robert. So he was very keen, obviously, Buster and Billy, of course, being his first movie.
It was kind of the mandate of this whole thing as well. Yeah. Because
it's great. Buster and Billy was great.
Yeah, he said to Gary in the first instance, and that's, you know, it really represents his character as well, you know, how open he is and how nice he is and accepting to do things. He's like, you know, if you want to do a documentary on Freddy, why you'd want to, I don't know, because our mate Mikey had done Never Sleep Again documentary. So Nightmare on Elm Street's a done. There's just no point.
The Never Sleep Again documentary is like 4 hours long, is it not?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So the case is closed on that. But he's the fact he was still open, you know, he said, if you're doing something on Freddy, I'll still talk. What his option was, if you want to do my career and if you want to dig into everything else beyond Freddy, you get everything. You get all of me. You get, you know, as many. Well, we only planned on having one interview with him. We ended up doing four, which was great for us.
Because people tell stories, you want to go and follow up.
Yeah, exactly that. Yeah.
Mark Hamill called bullshit. Is this true? I'm kidding.
Let's just retweet that one again. Yeah. I did actually try doing that on the Hamill one as well. I remember going out of my way a bit, I think, when you were trying to
look for it. Yeah.
Thingy of like cut out of Freddy, you know, on the Death Star or whatever with Luke and the Stormtrooper outfit and not a sausage.
But, like, they weren't going to touch that one.
Yeah, probably have Disney chasing me now for that.
The truth is, I don't see what the big deal is to that, because everything turned out fantastic, and both actors, everybody's incredibly respected. If there was an interpersonal falling out, that I understand, right? If they're friends and they're hanging out and they get beers and pizzas on that's their Saturday nights, and I understand that. Like, we're just not friends anymore, and that happens in Hollywood.
Does you? I think remember Mark's tweet was much more about his manager, giving credit to his manager. And I think maybe he felt that Robert's story took away from that, you know, his manager at the time, which I get that. And I'm not sure if it's probably the same manager and he's loyal. But at the end of the day, it's a story. It's a Hollywood story. It's interesting. We all remember the past differently. We all remember situations. You know, I help you, you help me. I think you're right. I mean, it doesn't matter at the end of the day. It's interesting. Robert tells it. Robert believes it. And Robert, you know, and other people talk about it. I mean, Adam Green talks about it because he's heard that story before. And, you know, what? I don't think Robert would have been a great Han Solo, probably. But again, you never know, because we'd never have had Harrison, would we? So you're never going to know, are you then, really? It's the same as if Kane played Freddy. You know, we'd never have had Robert, so we'd nothing to compare him to. You know,
Harrison Ford is Freddy Krueger.
Yeah. Imagine that.
The Kane Hodder as Freddy thing was awesome. Yeah, that was one I hadn't heard either. And I'm not the biggest horror file.
Yeah.
But like that story is probably a pretty well-known story, and I'd never heard it.
Well, Robert hadn't heard it. You know, Robert was quite obviously... and also Robert was really kind of like touched by the whole section about the Freddy versus Jason, I think, because he was very kind of open about it. He actually quite got a bit emotional. Kane did.
Okay.
But I think when you look back, even like you can see probably them trying to go with Kane, because when you look at Elm Street 2 and they brought a stuntman in who was big and walking through, and, you know, that was obviously on the agenda. You know, it wasn't always about obviously having an act to play that character, because as soon as you got to part two, they went for a stuntman originally. So it just, I think that there's credence to that story as well, you know, and again, Kane tells it, and Kane obviously was there at the time. And I'd never heard that. And I'm a massive Nightmare on Elm Street fan. just a nice little kind of like connection, you know, the kind of separation, kind of like, you know, was it 6 degrees, 7 degrees of Kevin Bacon kind of nonsense where everyone's connected, aren't they? It's the same kind of story, really, I think.
In his Freddy audition story reminds me of the Lance Henriksen Terminator story.
Yeah.
Right? Where Lance Henriksen goes in for James Cameron to scare the shit out of the executives, and ultimately the role went to Arnold. And the Arnold story in this one is really great too, that they're in an early 1974 or 75 movie together, and they're like, man, Arnold's the nicest guy. He's always prepared. We got to help him out. And then realize that through his bodybuilding endorsements, he already owned most of Ocean Park Boulevard.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Which is nuts. But you've heard those stories of by the time Arnold was a movie star, he was a multimillionaire through real estate, which is incredible. What were some of the stories that you had to cut? Like, what are some of the stories that you were pursuing and either dried up? You couldn't get two people to talk about it, so you couldn't confirm it, or one that you're like, that one's still out there somewhere, or maybe it's in the bonus material Geekscape. Listen, the bonus material is going to be available on digital on June 6th as well.
I think sometimes they do. iTunes normally release the bonus features, don't they? They did for Pennywise, so it might be. Yeah, I'm not sure it probably will be. Obviously, but I think the physical release, the collector's edition steelbook, and the Blu-rays out. Sometime in July, 25th of July, I believe it is.
Okay.
Be on there.
And I mean, you'll be at Comic-Con at our booth to promote that?
Well, if Screenbox invite us. Yeah. Yeah, so.
Screenbox, you have the.
You'll have us to stay over.
If you are listening, yeah. In terms of stories, it's really difficult because it's kind of like Robert just tells his life instantly. But I think for me, the one we were kind of cagey about the most, I mean, it's a shame we couldn't get people from his family, you know, and I think it's a shame of, you know, for his age anyway, his parents aren't about it. That would have been nice to get some family members, but Robert doesn't have a family, really. He doesn't have a big family. It's really was just him and his parents, and then obviously his first wife Betsy, who's passed away since, and obviously then Nancy. The one we were worried about the most was the cocaine story from Not Round Street 2, and we edited around that story a little bit, you know, what Gregor Puncher says, because it was very more explicit about the cocaine, and we even had a cartoon image, I think, created of Freddie with coke. We were worried about that.
Really pussied it as well on that one.
Yeah, but Robert was cool with it.
Robert loved it. He laughed his head off.
We were crapping our pants when we first watched it with him. Yeah. We watched it in a hotel room with him on this very laptop I'm talking to you on now. In my room, mine and my wife's room. And Robert and Nancy were like, oh, we want to watch it before it screens at Sitges Festival. We're going to come up and watch it with you. And here's a little anecdote for, you know, to boot, but I'd just taken the world's biggest shit. Yeah, that wasn't a good way to start things off. But we're coming up to your room now. I'm like, fuck, babe, get the Febreze, open the windows, call an exorcist now, because the rooms are lovely, but they're not that big, and you kind of, you know, you can't escape things when you're in a hotel room. But they came up and they watched it. They watched it on a laptop on, like, you know, those hotel room desks. And you had myself, Gary, Adam, and my wife all sat there on those, like, kind of two double beds put together. And I remember that moment when it was like, you know, when it feels like time's going so fast when it's like, oh, God, Nightmare on Elm Street montage. Oh, God, no, Nightmare on Elm Street 2. I see him tapping his finger. And I think Gary and I actually held hands, despite my wife.
We did, yeah.
Held hands, gripping each other, going, oh, God, 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 God. And then I think it was just a simple little, from him. Yeah. And that was it. Like, oh, thank fuck.
But it's after he said to us, didn't he? Because we were like panicked, because Nancy says to us, oh, Robert wants to talk to you about the doc. We were thinking, shit, we're going to be in trouble. And he came to me and went, listen, he said, I don't care about nudity. I don't care about drugs. Those things happen. Can we talk about some of the films that maybe you missed out? Mm-hmm. I think Chris will tell that story as well. But it was like such a relief. We were literally shitting ourselves. We genuinely thought he's going to kill us.
Because, you know, putting in the cocaine story, the Nightmare on Elm Street 2 cocaine story, which explains Nightmare on Elm Street 2 as like an outlier to the series. When you watch Nightmare on Elm Street 2,
you've got to be on coke to make it.
Okay. I mean, I think Dream Warriors is the one that a lot of people, the Chuck Russell one is the one that people are like, that thing is amazing. Yeah. I love Dream Warriors. And it launched some careers, like Patricia Arquette. Yeah. I think Chuck Russell went on to do, did he go on and do Invasion of the Body Snatchers in that stuff with the big...
No, the Blob.
Was it the Blob? He did the Blob. Yeah. but and then the Scorpion King. No, we got. I think he did one of the sequels to the Mummy with the Scorpion King. This or that. Chuck Russell. He also did Eraser. Like, and of course, my favorite Chuck Russell movie, The Mask. I don't think Chuck Russell gets enough credit, actually. And Dream Warriors is one of those. And obviously, you got Rennie Harlan on the fourth one. Did you ever seek out any of these directors, like Rennie Harlan or Chuck Russell? No,
because we wanted it to be very limited, really, on Freddy, it sounds daft. Because, again, Mikey, our co-producer, who had done Never Sleep Again, getting too many people involved in Freddy would have been just too much, I think. So we literally... Dominant.
Yeah, that was the challenge of the doc overall, was the level of Freddy we put in it. And obviously the mandate is we're going to talk about, you know, everything but Freddy. However, look at our poster, the opening, the closing. The thing is, you've got to treat you've got to treat Freddy as the gateway, like it was for all of us. Mm-hmm. You know, that's how we all know him. And then I think that's what we kind of enjoyed the most in terms of, I mean, we knew it certainly with the interviews, and certainly got to get some faces in there. But yeah, it's a slippery slope, I think, as a franchise. Oh, because if you get that actor from that one, if you get that actress from that one and that director, that writer.
They talk to each other.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a slippery slope, I think, isn't it? So I think, you know, well, the boys
we kind of covered the whole franchise, really, from one to six in about 25 minutes, I think it was, wasn't it? Really,
with Freddy and Jason, versus Jason as well.
So what we've done, obviously, in the doc, it starts off obviously Freddy. You know, that first story is about Freddy Krueger, when it goes back. Then we get obviously the build up, obviously, as Chris says, you know, to Elm Street, and then that whole legacy of Ben, and then we come back then to New Nightmare. Then we have a gap and come back to Freddy versus Jason. We have another gap and come back to the Goldbergs, and at the end, Freddy's mentioned again, but it's really
and there's a relevance to his career as well, isn't there? Like how it reflects his career at the time, I think, because you had that 1 to 6, you know, the montage, and look how great everything's going, and then you've got the fallout of that, which is like all these different horror projects, like Phantom of the Opera, etc., Mangler. But then, like, what I find interesting is like I've always considered Wes Craven's New Nightmare just a little bit on the sideline from the other ones, and I love it equally, you know, if it's one of the best ones for me, but it's what it represents of his career. It's like one of the best ones, and yet it was a box office bomb, and I think it's important to have kept it separate from the others because of what it meant to his career at that time, and the horror industry as a whole, that the, you know, mainstream industry had had enough of the 80s slasher icons. And they were more interested in Silence of the Lambs, Seven, you know, psychological Oscar-winning thrillers, you know, which are still basically horrors. And it was not until Scream. So it was important that we made sure Freddy was present, but what it meant to his career, I think, you know. And of course, Freddy versus Jason just being like that big boom payday. And I think he says it himself. It was his last biggest grossing movie in 2003. Oh God, that makes me feel.
It was a while ago, and remember seeing that thing in the theaters.
Me too. Yeah,
you watch that in the theaters, and you're loving it. It was awesome. Yeah.
But Robert said as well. You know, Robert was very clear that he understood, as we said from the beginning, how important Freddy is to the doc. He understands that he does draw people in, and we had a con yesterday where we did a talk. Me and Chris, and I think Chris Hampton, the same thing, you know, that we know it's going to get people having Freddy on the poster will draw people in. But the whole point is we draw them in, and then we show them beyond the glove. That's the whole point of a doc. You know, talk about Buster and Buddy, talk about, you know, Big Wayne.
Leslie Vernon, a movie that...
It's a great
Scott Glosserman came on the show. Did y'all... Scott Glosserman, the director of Vernon? Is that correct?
We had booked him in, but we didn't get him because of COVID, you know. COVID did screw us over, but also helped us massively at the same time. It's a very strange kind of thing for us, COVID was. Like it was for everybody.
Yeah.
But, we had to let some people go who we'd actually booked and arranged to because of COVID. But again, it's like we would have had then 4-3 people from that film talking about it. And it's only a very short bit in the film as well. And that's the horrible thing.
It's a great movie, Geekscape. Yeah, you've seen Leslie, the Beyond the Mask, Scott Glosserman. I think Scott and I went to, I don't know how, do I know Scott from going to college with him? But he was on, I think, one of the first 20-30 Geekscape episodes way back in the day. We went to Scott's house, and Scott and I communicated for a bit, and I think Leslie Vernon is one of those movies people kept asking for a sequel for.
Yeah, they did. They were really interested in it. Yeah,
that would have been a kick-ass franchise. And I love the Beyond the Mask stuff. I think that Leslie Vernon movie is awesome. The thing about New Nightmare as well is what y'all point to in the movie is it is Wes Craven transitioning into Scream era, and it is him going meta in a great way. And did people get it? No, maybe they didn't get it when it came out. Do people go back and revisit New Nightmare? Yeah. And does it hold up as the meta commentary that he did so well in the Scream movies? Absolutely. I think people go back and they see that DNA and are like, oh, Wes was starting to figure out where the parameters are on this by maintaining a horror movie while commenting on a horror movie.
Yeah.
And that's a tricky navigation, but you can understand why Wes and Robert were obsessed with making this after having done 5-6 movies of Freddy becomes this thing and then kill some kid who's obsessed with, I don't know. I mean, you could have seen him in like the anime manga sequence turning into Dragon Ball and going Super Saiyan Freddy on people. Yeah. Like it could have just kept going, right? Like by that point, it was like, okay, like what else are we going to have Freddy become? I think New Nightmare is the solid cap on that era.
Yeah.
I think it also really shows, I think Nancy says in the doc, Nancy, as Heather says in the doc, it really...
Don't go less honest now, Gary.
It was really a point where Robert was in his career as well. You know, that, you know, for Wes and Heather, you know, he's the director and the creator. She's the main star of the first film and obviously coming back, obviously, in the third one. Yet Robert is the one that gets all the attention, and that's shown in the doc, isn't in the film. That scene where Heather's on the talk show and Robert walks in dressed as Freddy, and the fans go mental. And that was actually what was happening at the time, you know, in Robert's career. He'd become that icon by then, and thankfully he still is. You know, that's not gone away. The crowds are still there for him, and the fans are still there. And that was what how many years ago was New Nightmare?
94?
Four, yeah.
It's 94, geez. Yeah.
That is nuts. Also, I think Freddy's Dead was one of the early... I think that was the first 3D film I ever saw in the theater.
Oh, really?
And I love when the spirits go flying towards the screen and stuff like that, when he's getting consumed by the souls. And y'all have a great conversation about that sequence where with the chest, when the souls are all coming out of that prosthetic. And it was the day... Am I getting this right? That his dad was on set?
That's the fourth film.
That's the Randy Harlan film?
Yeah.
But I remember the 3D Freddy's Dead when those things fly out, people trying to catch him in the theater in front of me.
I remember not being allowed to go and see because I was only probably about, 11 at the time. Mm-hmm. And my net might be younger than that. And my nan and mom went to go and watch the film. And I remember them coming home and I sat there all night and they had to tell me exactly what happened in the movie because I wanted to know. You know, it was literally, I wanted a commentary of the film.
How does he die?
Yeah, literally. I wanted to know everything now. And my nan's like probably in the late 60s at the time and she's trying to tell me. She didn't have a clue what she was talking about. So it's like, tell me now. How does he die?
Is he really dead? Did y'all have any films you wanted to pursue and maybe you gathered a whole lot of information on the film and the bread just didn't rise on that one? And when it came time to editing, that section had to go. And I'm speaking specifically of Never Too Young to Die, starring John Stamos, Vanity, and Gene Simmons.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. There's a couple, to be fair. Like, I mean, there's Adventures of Ford Fairlane.
Yeah,
they mention it in the you mention it in the film.
He mentions, but I never watched it until it's not readily available. There's a lot of things actually, to be honest. Buster and Billy is a prime example. The Hustle, the one with Burt Reynolds. Stay Hungry, I think, was available because of the Schwarzenegger thing. But so many of these films have never actually been readily available in the UK on any media, maybe VHS in their day. So to be honest, that's one of those films I didn't know about. And for me, what was annoying as a massive Prince fan was finding out, oh my God, he was in a film with Morris Day. I know you said one with Vanity. Jesus. But, there's things like that. Like retrospectively, it's just because of the limited resources we had of people to get involved. I suppose in retrospect, you could have said, actually, well, Rennie Harlan could have been a kill two birds one stone kind of affair. I mean, an interesting one, I think, to be honest, is, and I feel really ignorant in forgetting its name now, but Lance Henriksen is in this documentary because of a film they featured in together, but much later in their careers, like 2011, like a little indie drama thriller. And to be honest, we've like, you know, when we were doing the edit, you know, especially the second pass I was working on with Gary, it was like, all right, we got to justify these people. We got to make, like, you know, people a bit more omnipresent, because on the first edit, there was a lot of people who just rocked up in their respective areas. Like, I don't know, Bill Catt for Big Wednesday. And then they just disappear. And it was sort of the same for Lance. He only rocked up in one little spot on the original edit, didn't he? And then, so we were trying to see, like, we need to get more value. You know, I say more value, but they got to make him a bit more present in the stock. And I did try looking at what content we got from both Lance and Robert. And bless him, Lance talked a lot, a lot. But then when I tried looking at the area where he talks about the film, all you had was a little bit. We did a film. Shit, no, let's go back to the story about cat shit.
No, the sequence you have them in, where it's we're broke actors, we're coming up, I think is the perfect place to put that.
And it's like you said, actually, what I love about that era of films is both Lance and Robert are not dissimilar to each other. You can even say the same for Schwarzenegger to a certain extent. All these people who became like rock stars in the 80s, all like rock up in various 1970s films. You know, you've got Lance Henriksen at the arse end of Dog Day Afternoon.
Dog Day Afternoon, he's one of the cops,
And Close Encounters of the Third Kind. Schwarzenegger doing these little dramas or naff comedies with Kirk Douglas, and Robert in all his films. And then they just have that moment. And in particular as well, we got a James Cameron anecdote in there, which kind of gels at least the other two together with what made them household names. So that's what's incredible about Robert's career and all these people he's met. He's encountered all these figures before they were famous, and he remembers every single detail. And he probably knew all those details just the same as he did before they got big. And then now he's able to regale those stories, not like a, oh, I know this person. No, I was just paying attention at the time to that little, you know, arts and crafts guy over there on Galaxy of Terror putting up styrofoam burger boxes on the set.
Galaxy of Terror sequence. I love learning more about Galaxy of Terror and how Cameron was one of the effects guys over there.
Well, we tried to get Sid Haig as well, and Sid had agreed to do it. He'd agreed. And literally on the day of his interview, we got a message that he wasn't very well. And then I think he cancelled twice in the same week. You know, he rescheduled. He said, I want to do it, you know, but I'll do it, you know, 2 days' time. And then couldn't do the 2 days' time again because he wasn't feeling well still. And obviously then, unfortunately, he passed away. We would have loved to have got him in it. And I know Rob,
the mentor angle as well, I think.
Yeah, because Robert was really kind of like, yeah. But there's a couple of the films that we cover in the bonus feature. So we cover Dance Macabre. It was in the original edit, which didn't really fit in the narrative. It made it a bit stagnant, I think, the narrative then. It was a great bonus feature. And we also cover the series Nightmare Cafe with Jack Coleman in the bonus features as well. So some things we pull in and that's take back out again just because of narrative flow, really.
Sure. But Too Young to Die.
I'm going to
send you the VHS.
Chris said no.
If you've never seen Never Too Young to Die, like, it's one of these movies that we would all get together to watch, and it's like, is it a good movie? No. But I've had Robert on the show twice. One for the zombie hookers, strippers? And one with Adam for Hatchet. Yeah. Am I saying those words? Guys, my brain is gone. There's just been so much. when you do the show too long and don't have a producer to help you fact check. And I think on one of them, I brought up Never Too Young to Die because you're watching this movie for how not so great it is. And it's John Stamos trying to be an action star and Vanity trying to split away from being associated with, like, you know, a performer for Prince and doing her own acting thing. And Gene Simmons doing a role that, whatever that is. And you're watching it. And then about three-fourths into the movie, Robert Englund pops up. And the movie's already bad. The movie's already got no redeeming. And then Robert Englund pops up in this character role. And you're like, holy shit. And you know, I think that would be post. I mean, with John Stamos bankrolling a movie, is that post-Freddy? Like, this is... But Kenny Johnson, talking to, when I saw Kenny Johnson, Kenny Johnson's such a kind person, and Geekscape is, if you love V as much as I love V, there's an episode just a few back on the feed, I think it was a month ago, where Kenny Johnson sat down for almost 2 hours and talked to Christian Blatt on this very feed about the 40th anniversary of V, which is this year. And I love V, and the amount of love and attention y'all heaped on V made me a really happy, happy guy. So I'll take the bullet on Never Too Young to Die.
Yeah.
And the fact that y'all just totally skipped it, and I'll live with the love of V. Hollywood Dreams and Nightmares, Geekscape, is a Robert Englund story. It's available on Screenbox and digital on June 6th, 2023. I think this is on your feed as soon as as soon as I can put it up here. I think it's a couple days away from the release. What else are y'all working on as far as covering? Like, what are the stones you still have yet to uncover?
The backlog.
Yeah, so we've managed to get in the last couple of years, obviously, get three projects out, which were obviously in our kind of like backlog. I mean, Robert Doc actually isn't that long, you know, for us. Obviously, COVID kind of delayed that project. So Pennywise was a long project for us, you know, and we finally got that released last year. And obviously, and again, Chris will talk about this now, but we've got Robodoc, the creation of Robocop, coming out on Screenbox later in the year, I think October time.
You guys are coming back for that. Yeah, I just heard that. Yeah. Did y'all hear that Paul Verhoeven Empire Strikes Back story?
No.
No. God, that's like genuinely one I don't know.
Guys.
Go on.
Okay. Close. This came up in our horror movie night thread. Geekscape, if you're listening to this because of Horror Movie Night, one of our podcasts here on the network that is all horror. And if you're listening to this, first off, you're screaming at me for all the horror facts that I'm forgiving. in the Horror Movie Night group on Facebook, someone mentioned Mad Heidi, which is a movie Casper Van Dien's in from the last couple. I think I know when it came out. The premiere was October 14th. How do I know that? Because it was my wedding day. How do I know that? Because Scott Roger, the host of one of the co-hosts of Horror Movie Night, was like, Casper Van Dien was in Jonathan Lennon's wedding, wasn't it? His wife Jenny was in our wedding as one of Heidi's bridesmaids. And yes, I married a woman named Heidi on the same day as the premiere for a movie called Mad Heidi, which is kind of like a fun tongue-in-cheek exploitation riff on a movie, and Casper's in it. They went from our wedding to the premiere, Casper's wearing, and Jenny are wearing the same stuff from our wedding at the premiere. I think Casper changed his shirt and Jenny, but for the most part, those premiere photos, I was like, hey, that's what you were wearing in our wedding. Casper has some of the best Verhoeven stories. And today, Geekscape, is that we're recording this, pre-recorded this episode, is the 43rd anniversary of the release of Empire Strikes Back.
Yep.
One of these Verhoeven stories popped up, and I'm going to have to run it past Casper to confirm, because they're super tight from the Starship Troopers. Long story longer. Lucas was looking for a director before he got Kirshner for Empire. He met with Verhoeven. And Verhoeven's a young filmmaker, and he's in the mix. Let me see if I can Google the name of this movie, because it's one of these movies that.
Spets is about 1980, and that's like.
Yeah. So Paul Verhoeven gives him a screening of Spetters, which is the 1980 movie. He's like, I got this brand new movie coming out in 1980 called Spetters. Lucas never called it back. After Paul Verhoeven showed him Spetters, Lucas never called him back, just ghosted him. And then when it was time to make this movie, which had already been delayed by the fire from, you know how there was a fire at the studios off of the Shining, right? And that delayed things. And then they went to film in, you know, the Iceland or wherever, or Greenland, wherever they were filming the snow stuff. And there was a crazy 100 years and never been weather like this storm that delayed things even further. But I was reading all about Empire Strikes Back today, and that Verhoeven story came up about his meeting with Lucas and showing him Spetters, the bike racing movie, and Lucas ghosted him.
It makes sense, though, because I suppose like Soldier of Orange he had done just a couple years prior, so that would kind of make sense, a World War II kind of thing to have that for that.
But yeah, the sweet we got dogfights, we got trench warfare in Empire, we got all this stuff that we're looking for. And he shows us spetters, and the contract gets moved away from the table.
Yeah, I'm not surprised.
Holy crap.
But then I suppose it's ironic then, isn't it? Because then Kirshner goes on to do RoboCop 2, who would have been a good person if we'd got that, because we we've got a lot on RoboCop coming out. That project's been, it'll have been 7 years in the making. That's coming out as a four-part series at the end of the year on just the first film. So we basically break the film apart, and it's almost scene by scene dissection.
Y'all coming back to Geekscape on that RoboCop thing, because that's one of my favorite movies. I say it all the time.
I know we're not on.
Dude, no, it's fine. I have that. Is that a steelbook? Oh my god! Can you fly, Bobby? I love RoboCop. And y'all got my Michael Keaton to talk to y'all for that one. That's a joke.
Wait, you know, we actually
because y'all referenced the Sam Bayer Nightmare on Elm Street for a hot second in an image in this documentary. In the Sam, no offense, Sam, the Sam Bayer film.
It's always kind of been
everyone's talented in that film. It's crazy. Everyone's talented in The Bread Didn't Rise.
We've always tried. Like, we had the same with Pennywise. We didn't cover the remake because it was just coming out when we were making that. We didn't do it for RoboCop, and we haven't really covered it on this. And I think ultimately, whenever we're asked why didn't you cover them, not so much in the It reboot case, but with the others, there's not a lot of nice things, not for us to say or the people who made them to say it, but just generally, if you sort of say, oh, yes, the remake of Nightmare on Elm Street, you pretty much guess what the response is going to be like to it, you know. And
I think there's a recall y'all cover, though. That's a joke. I'm not saying that.
No, Showgirls, actually.
What's that?
Showgirls, actually. Yeah, that's what we...
Yeah. I love that y'all are doing a Verhoeven documentary. It's fascinating. In that Empire story, my eyes almost popped out of my eyes reading that Verhoeven story this morning. It was awesome.
Generally didn't know that.
Yeah, when y'all come back to talk RoboCop, and you have to come back because RoboCop, like, I'm saying it all the time, and my wife is like, my wife has never seen RoboCop. I don't think she's interested in RoboCop. I finally showed her Starship Troopers because Casper's in it. She's like, this movie that Casper's super famous for, the Starship Troopers. And I said, all right. You want to see it? She doesn't like the horror, the gory stuff. And that movie is very gory. And I love that. That movie's incredible. But she doesn't know why I keep saying, where's my goddamn phone, my motherfucking phone call? She just doesn't understand. And I think it's the spitting afterwards that she's offended. I'm kidding. Where's my motherfucking phone call? She's a 70s show fan. I don't understand how she hasn't seen that movie.
What's wrong with Red Foreman? He's just a little bit darker. That's all.
Can you fly, Bobby? It's incredible. And I'm always doing that thing too, help me! Where the guy with the toxic waste? It's incredible. Is that legit from the set?
No, that's actually guys. Gary made.
Chris is rotating his camera and he's showing me the recreation of the Roma of the you know, there's an action figure of that thing.
Yeah,
it's insane. Gary, you made that as an effects artist?
Yes, I took up some kind of, like, you know, during COVID. I started doing some special effects work and kind of props.
I love that.
Yeah.
I love that you did that during COVID while everybody else was learning how to bake sourdough. Remember that? Remember that? That was like 2 weeks of COVID where everybody's like, I'm going to learn to bake sourdough.
Yeah, we didn't do that.
Like, what the hell is this? This is like the checkbook for early pandemic is like, I'm going to learn how to cook sourdough. I'm going to watch Tiger King.
We watched Tiger King,
and I think there was another box to check on what you were going to do in the pandemic. And I think that's incredible that you did some VFX practice.
Yeah,
good job on that stuff. But the leather face behind you is actually a victim, right? That's actually human skin.
That's actually the last person that interviewed us. Yeah,
that's fine. Next time you're in LA, you can remove my face. I'm probably better off without it. Yeah,
don't give Chris any ideas. He probably will.
Well, Chris, Gary, congrats on getting this movie out.
Thank you.
And Geekscape was if you love Freddie as much as I love Freddie, and if you love Robert as much as I love Robert, I brought him up with a financier three weeks ago as a possibility. I love Robert. I would love to work with him. I love interviewing him. You got to check this movie out, Geekscape. It's Hollywood Dreams and Nightmares, the Robert Englund story. It comes out on Screambox and digital on June 6, 2023. In case you're listening to this, it is out. If you're listening to this, it's out, guys. because I had to wait to release this episode. I'm excited to talk RoboCop with you guys. Let's connect. And just congrats, guys. I love that what y'all are doing. I love the sticking to the genre.
Thank you. It's really appreciated.
Thanks, Geekscapers. Geekscapers, we will be back with more horror talk. I think I'm also talking to the actress who plays, this episode may have already been released. I haven't recorded it yet. I'm recording it later today, but the actress who plays Zelda in Zelda Tears of the Kingdom is going to come on the show. We're talking all sorts of Zelda talk. And then Bomani J. Story, who directed this Frankenstein horror movie that premiered at South by Southwest, it's called Angry Black Girl and Her Monster, is on the show. I pre-recorded that one as well. There's lots of great stuff on the Geekscape feed, so share it with your friends, tell people about Geekscape, subscribe, and all that. We're always trying to get some cool pop culture people here to celebrate geekdom with me. And if y'all can make it to Comic-Con, let's do this. All right? Cool, guys. Thank you so much, and you're welcome back anytime.
Thank you.
Thanks very much.
Yes, thank you. Yeah,
of course.
You're listening to the Geekscape Network.